Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. It is Monday, September 18th. If you're wondering why you felt a little down, a little tired, it's Monday, people. That's why. And we are glad to be here with you here on Today's Issues. You're listening to American Family Radio. Tim Wildman is in Washington, D.C., hosting his Spiritual Heritage Tour. He will be back, we are hoping and believing, for Trivia Friday at the end of this week. And so we look forward. I always love it when Tim can host that show because he does such a great job. You got to have the dean sitting in the big chair.
That's right.
Walker Wildman, assistant to the president. Here, Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Steve, welcome back to Today's Issues.
Thank you, Ed, and congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, you're much more important now than you were last time that you were hosting. Because last time you were hosting, they introduced Tim, and you had to come on.
Oh, yes.
Say,
yeah, they've made a new little intro.
Special.
I'm Special Ed. That's what I was one of my nicknames. There is one of my nicknames when I was growing up. I'm not mocking anything, folks. Please don't email me.
Ed at American Family.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, send it to that because that won't go anywhere. That's not my email address. We're going to have something in just a second here, Steve. I did want to mention that, you know, of course, the Emmys were last night. We talked about that in the first hour. But here's something I was reading. It says, this is the first year that the red carpet got air conditioning. The red carpet, when all the stars come out of their limousines.
They can't quite make it from the limousine to inside the building without air conditioning?
Well, it says, after last year's heat wave, stars and press were treated to much cooler temperatures this year than last year. Interestingly, the show opened with a sketch in which Allison Janney worried about several problems, including global warming.
Ah.
So here the global warming evangelists have air conditioning as they walk from their limousines, gas-guzzling limousines, into the Emmys.
Is indeed a first-world problem there.
Yes, yes, it is.
Well, that's a
remember
tough
Allison,
life.
I remember Allison Janney from the West Wing. I used to love that show. As conservative as I am and as liberal as they are, that was a really well-written show, and Allison Janney played the press secretary.
You were a fan of West Wing.
So I worked
That kind of makes you a communist, doesn't it, Steve?
Well, I think there might be a streak in there somewhere, but I was working at Focus on the Family at the time, and I was working in the public policy division. I was doing basically for them what I do for American Family Radio here, which is doing reporting and some anchoring on the network. And we would get together. I believe it aired on a Tuesday night, and Wednesday morning or Wednesday at lunch, all of us in public policy would get together and we'd watch.
It was a well-written show. And just some great actors on there.
We just, being political junkies, we just thought it was pretty cool. So.
And that's why me having enjoyed and interested in political science and foreign policy all my life, that's why I watched the old Get Smart show, because you know, then I could learn about foreign policy.
There you go.
And, you know, the international intrigue.
What was the name of their bad guys? The network.
Chaos.
Chaos. Yes.
Oh, that was a funny show. All right, folks, you don't want to hear about the shows I used to like. I've already had an unintentional trip back to the 70s during the first hour. So, listen, Steve, I mentioned in the first hour that Wesley Wildman and Brian Fisher and I got a chance to travel to Baton Rouge this weekend and West Monroe and meet with some of our listeners and supporters, and we spoke there. And afterwards, I had someone come up, and they said, how come we don't hear any more Snowflake File stories? And I said, you know what? I forgot all about that. I'm going to ask Steve Jordahl, and lo and behold, you have one for us today, right?
I do. This is from the Snowflake Files.
Hey, 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 Snowflake.
Snowflake.
My pretty little snowflake. Snowflake.
And let me just say at the outset, one of the reasons we don't have more is because I'm not hearing from y'all out there. If you have a snowflake story, and if you're not sure what that is, listen to this one coming up, and you'll kind of get an idea. But you can send your story suggestions to snowflakes, plural, at afa.net, and of course it's plural because there's so many of them out there, snowflakes at afa.net, and if you want, make sure you put your name in the make
in
the
email
and I'll mention it on the air. If you don't want to be mentioned on the air, don't worry about it. We won't.
And we can't always use, in the past, we've said we can't always use every story that comes in.
Right.
But we haven't had any for a while. So.
I'll use them if you send it. If you send it in, I'll get it. I'll get it in. I can, unless you send me 10 of them. I'll get it in. I promise. All right. So Nashville, Tennessee. Dateline Nashville, Tennessee. Lipscomb University. I hadn't heard of this. It's a Christian college there, apparently, up in Nashville area. And the president there, his name is Randy Lowry, invited African American students to his home for dinner. He wanted to chat about their experiences at the university. He wanted to give them some feedback. Given everything that's been happening in our culture, he wants to be sensitive to what's going on in his campus. He has to apologize. Why? Well, he put in the middle of his table what I think is, all other considerations notwithstanding, a very lovely centerpiece. Fall branches in a ceramic thing, along with some cotton stalks, and that was just over the top. The cotton ball and the cotton stalks that were for the African American students, being very sensitive apparently to history of the black people in America having to pick cotton when they were slaves. I don't know. It just seems to me that we're looking for reasons.
Let me say that that's not unusual during the fall to have cotton amongst a bunch of other kind of things that are harvested this time of the year. So, but they got upset because they thought that the president who invited them to his house for dinner
put that out on purpose
just to trigger them
right among the free food that he was giving them.
This is ridiculous. Now if he had a Confederate flag hanging in the dining room, I could see how that would
or a
people.
Noose or a banana peel hanging from a tree, apparently
that was at a college. Yes, it was Ole Miss.
I mean, you can, if you think about it, you can look everywhere you go, you can find something that offends you.
Yes.
You know, you can always find something to defend you in that.
Well, let me give you a perfect example. Last week I was walking into we have two kitchens here. We have a very big building. We have over 100 people working here at AFA, AFR, and across the street we have a lot of people. But we had a kitchen over here. I was walking over to heat up a piece of lasagna, and someone had left an empty jar of tomato sauce on the counter. And I thought, we're going here, huh?
Yeah.
This is the Italian. You're going to leave the tomato sauce out? And it really offended me.
That's racist.
Did you make it into work today?
I know. So, and let me just say this. We're not making light of true racial slurs that are offensive and should be offensive to all of us. But the reason this is in the Snowflake Files is, come on, guys. Really? Guys and girls, whoever was invited. The president of the university wanted to hear your heartbeat, invited you to his house for supper. Either he and or his wife fixed free food for you. You really think that he was trying to slip in a slur just to get under, just to needle you? I don't think so.
No.
It really kind of speaks, and this, we can move on after this, but it really kind of speaks to this overall what we saw really played up by the Obama administration, which is this identity politics where everybody belongs to some form of group. No one's just an American anymore. Right. You have to be some kind of
hyphenated
American, would be it gay American, African American,
Italian American. Yeah, I know. They're the worst.
They're the worst.
Yeah.
It's the who can out-victim the other person, I think, is where it goes. And it's just not healthy, in my reporter's opinion.
All right.
So Houston is recovering from this flooding. And what is not being told in the news, at least not a lot, it came out, but if you weren't paying attention, you might have missed it. Houston had to, not only was the flooding because of the 20 or more inches of rain that Houston got a problem, but a couple of their reservoirs, Attucks Reservoir and Barker Reservoir, were going to overflow. And so they had to intentionally release some water, and neighborhoods that would otherwise have escaped the flooding found themselves underwater. Now, I have a source in Houston that, and this source says, I understand this was a problem, and they did it to preserve the integrity of the reservoirs and the dams themselves, and they didn't want to flood downtown, which would have cost many, many more billions of dollars. Not that it wasn't already flooded, but so he understands that there was a decision to be made. But they said they were going to release the water on, I believe it was on a Monday morning early. They released it on Sunday night, and he said he was sitting home watching news coverage. He had been told that they might have to evacuate because of this, and then all of a sudden, the city cut his power. He was sitting in the dark, no more media to tell him what was going on, and about 12 hours early, they started releasing this water, and his house started getting flooded. He wasn't able to prepare the way he wanted to. He had to be evacuated by canoe, whereas he would otherwise have been able to prepare and walk and get his car and everything out. He said that the flood control measures on these reservoirs were not working properly, and so they weren't exactly sure how much water was in the reservoirs or how much they were letting go. We found out today that two elderly women died because of this this release of the water that was done improperly. Little or no warning, they say. When I called the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to find out what was going on this, they said, we're not doing any of the commenting on this. We're going to send you to the Department of Justice, Public Affairs. I thought, Department of Justice? That's very odd, because it's the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that's responsible for doing this, and that has nothing to do with justice.
Well, it may be just throwing this in, and this is just off the top of the head. It may be something where the Department of Justice defends, for example, the U.S. Corps of Army Engineers. Is it Army Corps?
Army Corps of Engineers.
Army Corps of Engineers. Maybe any kind of legal questions.
Well, or lawsuits that are coming.
Or possible lawsuits.
Let me tell you, and they're going to be coming. Now we have dead people because of this. And the Justice Department refused comment or said they had no comment on this to me. But there are going to be lawsuits. I'm going to be trying to reach out to some of our the people we know in Texas to see if they are planning anything. I've already started that process because a lot of more damage happened because they just didn't do this properly. I have not heard anybody claim that the city put out any reverse 911 calls, which they can do. You know, if there's a gunman loose in your area, they can call your phone and say, if you're in the block of 52nd in Maine.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, get out, because it's called a reverse 911.
Like a robocall.
Like a robocall. They can put a text message. You get the text message when there's a tornado in your area.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't, so far, he had no idea the water was coming until it started coming in his door. And so, I think this is a, now, Houston has really been inundated, and we use that in the literal sense of the word, of water. Yeah. They've had more than their fair share of heartache and trouble, and I don't want to add to the trouble, but what I can say is that there are lessons to be learned here, and by refusing to comment, by not engaging, by people having to come and get angry and sue, they're not really helping learn these lessons. It would be better if the city of Houston or the Army Corps of Engineers or whoever was responsible for notifying people and setting the schedule, if they would come clean and say, yeah, we didn't do this well, what can we do better? Mm-hmm. So that's something, keep an eye out, because that's going to be crossing the wires. I'm hoping to have something on it too before too long.
Yeah, that's an interesting situation there, and I'm sure more facts will come out as the days go on, especially if someone files a lawsuit. But I mean, this was just a devastating event all around, and you can point fingers at everybody. I mean, you could point fingers at the drainage system in Houston. Why didn't they build bigger drains? You know, so I'm not sure if you're allowed to sue the Army Corps engineers for doing a controlled release, because here's what happened. They didn't do the controlled release, even if they did it 12 hours early. The dam breaks, and you have a wall of water that goes, instead of hitting 100 homes, as devastating as that is, it hits 200 or 300 homes, and then all of those people sue the city for not releasing the dam in time. and following you know, the precautionary measures.
Well, I can guarantee you this: our court system will handle this in an efficient and fair-handed.
Right.
Justice will be served. I am certain of that. So anyway, that is an interesting story, and obviously tragic on a number of fronts. But we'll keep
Sounds
an eye.
Like
you'll keep an eye on this.
I'm following up on this one.
All right.
Speaking of courts doing justice, we have a federal judge in Chicago, last Friday late, so we weren't able to talk about it until now, has put on hold the Trump administration's sanctuary city policy. You know that any city that was going to label itself a sanctuary city was going to, the Trump administration was going to withhold some funds from that city. And what these cities are saying is that we are not going to notify immigration officials when we release an illegal alien, an illegal immigrant from jail. So these are illegal immigrants that are already guilty of something besides crossing the border. And it could be any number of crimes, violent or nonviolent. And they have said, in the guise of, you know, wanting to protect these illegal immigrants and wanting to keep trust with that community, they have said, we're going to shield you from the federal law. Well, a federal judge, and his name is U.S. District Judge Harry Leinweber, Leinenweber. Judge Leinenweber has put a stay on the entire nation. No sanctuary city will be deprived of funds as long as this order is in place, if the Justice Department decides it wants to abide by the order, which it probably will.
Hmm. Well, this is, and we need to have Abe in probably to ask this question, but this seems strange to me, Steve, that you have federal district judges, now not just on this issue, when we're talking about the temporary, what's been called the temporary travel ban from the six countries in the Middle East and Northern Africa, you have federal district judges who make a blanket ruling that affects the whole country when they, it seems to me, only have jurisdiction over their district.
Right.
I mean, is this something that's being discussed about these kinds of rulings?
Well, or, and this would be
maybe I just don't understand the law.
Well, no, my understanding of the law is that these judges are limited to their district, and but the judge said in his ruling, and this is something I wanted to ask Abe about. I poked my head in his office, but he hadn't seen the ruling yet. The judge, in his opinion, said there's nothing about any other city. He is in Chicago and ruled specifically with regard to Chicago, but he put the stay on the whole country because he says there's nothing about any other city that is having a problem with this that would present any other facts that would make this ruling any different. And what may be the turn here is that it's not saying that sanctuary cities are illegal. It's saying that while this is playing out in court, you cannot deprive them of their funds.
All right.
So the
expectation is
you have a likelihood of winning, said this judge. By the way, the judge was a Reagan appointee back in the day. So it goes to show, I suppose.
Well, this is no matter whether this was the Obama administration doing this through a different form or whatever. It's come to pass that that federal judges, essentially, they have a say in everything. There's no such thing as executive privilege, or really the executive branch. That's non-existent, because federal judges, at the end of the day, they give the thumbs up or the thumbs down on virtually any policy.
They're
decision.
Out of control. They're just out.
For
they're
years,
just out of control.
For years, that's been the complaint from conservatives, and I won't say it started, but it certainly gained a lot of momentum. This charge gained a lot of momentum during the marriage fights in the mid-2000s when judges would summarily overturn things like Proposition 8 in California, which a majority of Californians voted that marriage should be between a man and a woman, and a judge said, no.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I can't do that. So and this is just another and you're seeing these judges in their rulings give language, for example, the travel ban case is a perfect example where a judge decides, well, we're going to say you can ban people except for immediate family members and people that have this or that or whatever. And basically, the court is writing law,
right?
Which is way outside its mission.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how you correct that other than impeaching judges who are clearly acting in an unconstitutional manner, abrogating power to themselves unconstitutionally. I don't know what else you can do except impeach them and replace them with constitutionalists. Right. But then you risk, if the Democrats get in power, them starting to impeach constitutionalists and replacing them.
Yeah. It's, the other
this
way
is
to
an
do
unraveling
this,
of our constitutional.
The other problem. Way to do this, which would be the strongest rebuke short of unseating the judge, would be for Congress to come up and make a ruling about whatever it is. So, for example, if it was this travel ban, if Congress were to pass a law that said people from this country for the next 90 days can't come, and these the parameters, it would be a rebuke to the judge. It would overrule what the court wrote because the court ostensibly is ruling on what the law is, and Congress makes the law, so that would be a way to do it.
Well, that is an alternative, but I will say, because we've seen this 100 times, and I'm very cynical about this, a federal judge will circle back around and overrule Congress. That's happened before. It's the Supreme Court, rather, would be the one.
I don't doubt that a federal district judge
would override Congress.
Would have the. I guess the backbone, you know.
Well, because an example of this is Congress delegated regulating immigration to the president explicitly, and the federal judge said, "No, the president doesn't have immigration."
The other thing that Congress does have a power to do, and I've never seen them do it, is to proscribe the judge from ruling on a certain case. The only court that is mandated by the Constitution is the Supreme Court. Every other court in the land is a creation of Congress.
Right.
Congress made them like a parent. I made you, I can take you out.
Yes. And Congress
Now, technically,
what Congress could do is they could dissolve the district judges, the district court system, and they could dissolve the appellate circuits and then reconstitute them and have a president. Because those were all created by Congress. Now the chances of having that done,
but they can go smaller and say, you know what, we're going to take sanctuary cities out of the court's jurisdiction.
Right. They can name that.
Now it's almost a moot discussion because Congress can't seem to tie its own shoes at this point. Mm-hmm. But that is one way to.
They could have technically. Like, what you're saying is they could have. Said during all the fuss over same-sex marriage, they could have said the federal judiciary will not have jurisdiction over this issue.
And then
the final say would have been in state courts.
And that would have been right in line with the Constitution, where the 10th Amendment states that anything that isn't specifically mandated by the Constitution falls to the states. And as we've said 100 times, if we said it once on this program, plus dozens of others, you will not find homosexual marriage anywhere in the Constitution or anything about marriage in the Constitution.
Or abortion, any of those kind of things. All right, Steve, thank you so much. Steve Jordahl, who's reporter and news anchor for American Family News. You can find some of these stories on onenewsnow.com. Well, that's it for today's edition of Today's Issues. I'm Ed Vitagliano. Walker Wildman has been with us. Our thanks to Steve Jordahl and Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now, for their help in bringing today's news to you, our listeners. Please stay tuned for more great programming on American Family Radio. Lord willing, we will be back tomorrow for another edition of Today's Issues. Keep listening throughout the day for news and go to onenewsnow.com for our news. I get that?
You did well. A lot of news going on there, too.
All right.
Good job.
Thank you. We'll see you tomorrow, folks.